calendar. The first matter is in the personal restraint of Lightroth.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Jeffrey Ellis. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Lightroth. I'm not going to reserve any time for rebuttal, but if there's a natural breaking place, I'll take that remaining time. It was 15 years and 3 days ago that the state of Texas executed a young man by the name of Napoleon Beasley. It was 13 years ago that Mr. Lightroth was sentenced. In the intervening 15 years, there's been a revolution in the way we approach the sentencing of juveniles. That revolution, of course, will have no application to Mr. Beasley, who's been dead and buried since that period of time. The question in this case is whether that revolution, specifically as it was defined in O'Dell, applies to Mr. Lightroth and others like him whose youth was not considered at the time of sentencing.
Well, counsel, does the change that's occurred require that the individual be less culpable or just that he's a member of a class? And I'm asking because if the trial court record doesn't create that, how can we just remand for a new sentencing?
Well, there's a number of factors in your question.
Just steering a little.
It's not unusual that the trial court or sentencing record would not include information regarding the impact of youth on the crime, especially in a case from 2004. It was in 2005 that Christopher Simmons was the individual whose case was decided in declaring that the death penalty was unconstitutional for juveniles. And likewise, although information regarding the development of the human brain has progressed over a period of time, that information was largely unavailable and at least not recognized by the courts. Youth standing alone is still not a mitigating factor. O'Dell tells us that. The difference is, and the reason that the law has changed, is at the time of Hamim and up until O'Dell, youth was viewed as merely a personal characteristic, as a characteristic that would never justify imposing an exceptional sentence. Now, some of that was based on the fact that the science hadn't developed, and the second part of that was simply this, what O'Dell called an overly broad rejection of the impact of youth. When Hamim decides the case, it relies on a case actually from this court, State versus Jamar Scott, and Scott said, Scott was a case where he argued that his youth diminished his culpability and specifically cited to the statutory mitigating factor. And this court said the idea that his youth would somehow mitigate his murder borders on the absurd. And that's what Hamim adopted. So they said, look, at the time, as when Scott was decided and Hamim was decided.
That determination was a fact-based determination, not a rule of law-based determination. The focus was premeditation was inconsistent with the mere immaturity, wasn't it?
I respectfully disagree. It was a decision, as announced by this court, that youth could never mitigate culpability, at least as far as premeditated murder was concerned. In the original opinion, the court said premeditated murder is not a vice of youth. Now, the court may know that Mr. Scott's case is now back in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. This court decided a secondary issue about whether the so-called Miller fix and the eligibility of parole at 20 years is a sufficient cure. Obviously, that fix doesn't apply to Mr. Lightroth because he's over 18. So
my question, maybe to focus a little more, is I'm concerned about a remedy. If there's a change and it's to apply retroactively, is it just a sentencing hearing at which substantive evidence about his immaturity and how it affected his ability to commit the crime is a factor, or must it be a new trial because there must be expert testimony about his inability?
Yeah, it's just a new sentencing hearing. And it's we're certainly not making the argument that he's absolutely entitled to an exceptional sentence below the standard range. We're arguing only that his youth needs to be considered. When the Supreme Court reversed O'Dell and sent it back, Mr. O'Dell had a new sentencing hearing. He received a standard range sentence, and this court affirmed that sentence. And that's essentially the same remedy that we're asking.
And confined to the trial record?
No, he's entitled to two things. He's entitled to the advances in science. By which I mean he's entitled to have the court take notice of all of that information that was relied on by the U.S. Supreme Court in Roper versus Simmons, in Graham, in Miller, in Montgomery, just as he's entitled to the reliance of that information in the same way that this court relied on it in Ronquillo, the Supreme Court relied on it in O'Dell and Houston Scanius.
Is he entitled to an expert to apply it to him, and does he fail without one?
Well, it's an excellent question. In terms of this proceeding, he needs to make some minimal showing that the change in the law is material to him. And we think we did that by providing declarations in addition to his age, talking about his maturity level at the time of the crime. The difficulty, of course, is that in a PRP process, he's not entitled to that. So I would argue that, yes, he is entitled to an expert at the time of sentencing if one is requested and he can make a showing.
With regard to materiality, does it matter that he did not ask for an exceptional sentence down in this case?
No,
because he asked for the low to mid range, as I recall the record.
It doesn't matter because the law precluded any application of that. I mean, it doesn't mean that he couldn't ask and fail, but in terms of case law regarding retroactive application of a new case, it doesn't require that everybody complain in the face of the existing precedent. I mean, this court has to recognize and expect on some level that lawyers are not going to be arguing against existing precedent again and again. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes it happens for the good because it allows cases then to come up to this court and for this course to recognize that it's time to change the law based on the new science.
Does it matter for our analysis that I think both the prosecuting attorney at the sentencing and the trial judge at the sentencing wanted to go above the standard range, and they felt constrained and unable to do so, and that's why the sentencing judge went to the high end?
It doesn't matter. It may matter at the time of sentencing. It may matter at the time of resentencing. Again, we certainly don't stand here and say that Mr. Lightroth is entitled, absolutely entitled to an exceptional sentence. We only are asking that he get his day in court in front of a sentencing judge where that sentencing judge is told you have the discretion to consider youth, and you can weigh that against any aggravating factor that the state argues.
And we have a lot of these cases. On the record here, it's as strong as the Scott case, perhaps. I mean, the court was adamant that this was somebody who was in need of a high-end sentence. I mean, is this a futile exercise on this record that youth couldn't be a factor?
No, for two reasons. Number one, because evidence of youth was not presented, so the court didn't have it. The revolution in science hadn't happened, and the evidence wasn't presented. I have been involved in several resentencings of juveniles convicted of aggravated murder, including cases where the sentencing judge said, you are beyond any hope for redemption, your crime was the worst of the worst, and those individuals have since received sentences that will result in their parole eligibility. The first hearing that I'm going to do is in 2 weeks. And so those are cases where the facts of the crime remain the same over time. Those didn't change. The court could consider those facts, but there's a new set of facts that didn't exist because the science hadn't developed and weren't presented to the courts. And that's simply what we're saying. It's what Houston Scanius says, albeit in a slightly different context, that a court at the time of sentencing has to consider youth and its attendant circumstances. It's one of many factors that a court can consider. But in this case, there's no question but that the court did not consider that factor, did not weigh it along with any aggravating circumstances, and we're simply asking for another opportunity to go back in court where that happens.
Well, Houston Sconyers is a cruel and unusual case, right? Versus this is a statutory interpretation.
The line has been drawn, constitutionally speaking, at 18.
Right.
So, yes, this is a statutory substantive change to the SRA, and for that reason it applies retroactively to those who can show that it's material to their sentence. I see that my time has run out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, Ann Summers on behalf of the state of Washington. Judge Trickey, as you stated, Mr. Lightroth was a 19-year-old who received a 28-year sentence. So the Eighth Amendment is not in play here because he was not a juvenile, because it's nowhere near a de facto life sentence. So this is really a case involving the interpretation and the application of the Sentencing Reform Act. Mr. Lightroth's petition is untimely, therefore he must fall within an exception to the time bar. The exception that he's trying to establish is a significant change in the law. He must establish both that Odell was a significant change in the law and that it was material to his conviction. My argument is that it was neither a significant change in the law, nor is it material to his, not conviction, but sentence. I'd like to talk about the Miller case first. Miller was a recent case in which the state Supreme Court decided whether Mulholland was a significant change in the law. Mulholland was the case that clarified that the court could impose an exceptional sentence down of concurrent sentences for serious violent offenses. That seemed to have been an issue that was of considerable confusion in the lower courts and with practitioners, although the plain language of the SRA seemed to always allow for that. And Mulholland basically said the SRA has always allowed for this. And in Miller, they claimed, well, Mulholland is a significant change in the law because there are all these people out there who thought that you couldn't do this. And the Supreme Court said, no, that doesn't meet the standard of significant change in the law, which is quite a demanding standard. And they say, it's not a significant change in the law just because it debunked dicta relied on for years. And it's not a significant change in the law simply because counsel's understanding of the law on an unsettled question has changed. And this key question is, did anything prevent Mr. Miller from arguing for concurrent sentences at his sentencing hearing? So the question for you is, did anything prevent Mr. Lightroth from arguing for an exceptional sentence based on his youth? And I think if you read Hameem, the answer is no. Hameem was decided in 1996. This case was sentenced in 2003. Hameem clearly said that you could impose an exceptional sentence based on youth if you had some evidence that youth affected the capacity to appreciate the wrongfulness of your conduct. That is still the law after Odell. And I'd like to refer to this. Now, I know the court's struggling with this a little bit, and there's this key passage in Odell that I think we should discuss. And I'll just read it to you. It remains true that age is not a per se mitigating factor, automatically entitling every youthful defendant to an exceptional sentence. That's what the court held in Hameem. That is still the law. That's still the law under Odell. In this respect, we adhere to our holding in Hameem. But in light of what we know today about adolescents' cognitive and emotional development, we conclude that youth may in fact relate to a defendant's crime, that it is far more likely to diminish a defendant's culpability than this court implied in Hameem, and that youth can therefore amount to a substantial and compelling factor in particular cases justifying a sentence below the standard range. They are not changing the legal rule there. What they're saying is we know more about it, so this legal rule might apply in more cases than we thought it would apply in Hameem. But they're not changing the actual rule.
It would be a broadening of the application of the mitigating factor, right?
I think it's a recognition that there's more evidence that could be considered.
Okay. It could apply to different people than it was thought it could apply to before.
They're recognizing that it probably applies to a broader group of people than it. Yes,
Wouldn't that be a significant change in how the law is applied?
It would not be a significant change because nothing significant change has to overturn controlling precedent. The controlling precedent was Hameem. Mr. Lightroth could have argued for an exceptional sentence down based on Hameem, just the way Mr. Odell argued for an exceptional sentence down based on Hameem.
But
nothing in Hameem
Could he have received an exceptional sentence based on youth? That's not a...
Well, I don't know the answer to that question because I don't know what the evidence of is yet. They did cite to his attention deficit disorder. So I think they would have...
But you're accepting youth could have been enough to be an to grant an exceptional sentence to him.
Not just his age. Not just Lightroth is 19, but that the facts of Mr. Lightroth's life, his family circumstances, the facts of the crime all indicate that this crime occurred partly because of his age and not simply because of his criminal disposition.
I'm trying to be clear. Just being able to make the argument is hollow if the statute won't recognize that the argument is a proper basis for an exceptional down.
But,
so I'm just trying to make sure you...
But Hameem did say that.
You've said that. All right.
Yes, Hameem did say that youth can be the fundamental basis for finding that the defendant lacked the capacity to appreciate the wrongfulness of his conduct. But it's not an automatic discount, right? It's not just, as in Hameem, she's 18, therefore I'm going to give her an exceptional sentence.
You're really saying it's youth plus
it's
something.
It's youth plus, which is what and if you look at the O'Dell decision, that was what the state argued Hameem held, and the court agreed with the state's interpretation and said that is what we see that Hameem held. Now, what happened in O'Dell is the court made the mistake of saying, well, youth can never be, youth not relevant, or at least the court was concerned that that's what the lower court thought. So O'Dell was sent back to say youth can inform that mitigating factor. And in fact, recently the case came back up and O'Dell did not receive an exceptional sentence down. And that's been affirmed. So again, O'Dell does not mandate imposition of an exceptional sentence just because the defendant is 19. It doesn't create an automatic discount for everyone who's under the age of 25. More importantly, no exceptional sentence was requested in this case. And
why does that matter?
Well, what matters even more is that the sentencing court, knowing all the facts, chose a high-end sentence. So it matters because it's not material to his sentence. There has to be some basis to think that an exceptional sentence might have been imposed in this case, particularly when you consider this is a PRP, right?
Well, but the record here is clear that the sentencing judge wanted to go above the standard range, but felt constrained.
Yes. So that's why there's no reason to think
a low to mid-range sentence.
Yes. There's no reason to think that the sentencing judge would have imposed an exceptional sentence down. So in order to get relief in a PRP,
what about just going to the low end of the range, or even to the middle of the range?
Well, the court could have done that, and it didn't.
And he didn't.
Yes.
He didn't consider his youth. And he didn't consider...
Well, he did consider his youth. He said, I realize Mr. Lightroth is young, but under the facts of this case, this is what I see as sociopathic behavior. Now, if you look at the facts, after apparently making a determination that the victim had stolen his gun, he basically just shot him point blank in the chest. There was no argument. There was no sort of conflict in which Mr. Lightroth was making an impulsive decision to react. It was basically an execution. And then he threatened to kill one of the witnesses if they didn't help them dispose of the body. And then when he was in prison, he suborned perjury and impliedly threatened to do something to the witnesses of one of his fellow inmates if that inmate would perjure himself in this trial. That's all fairly sophisticated. None of that can be simply attributed to impulsivity or peer pressure. And one of the arguments that Mr. Lightroth makes is, well, this crime is evidence of my poor judgment, and poor judgment is an attribute of youth. But every crime is evidence of poor judgment. And if you were to say that the fact that the defendant had committed a crime is evidence of his poor judgment, therefore it's evidence that his youth affected his culpability, that means every youthful person gets an exceptional sentence down. That cannot be the basis. Poor judgment cannot be the basis for an exceptional sentence down when, in fact, the commission of a crime itself is poor judgment.
Under the Sentencing Reform Act, does the trial court have to consider mitigating and or aggravating factors when imposing a sentence within the standard range?
Does the court have to consider?
In other words, can a sentencing judge just come out and say, the range is 5 to 10, I'm imposing 10? And not give reasons why.
Yes. Yes. And remember, now, Odell is about the court's ability to entertain a request for an exceptional sentence down. Odell does not bring that Eighth Amendment analysis. So if you're talking about a Miller hearing, this case doesn't require a Miller hearing because this person's not a juvenile and he's not receiving a de facto life sentence. Now, one more thing I would like to say, if I have time. If this court really has doubts as to whether Odell is a significant change in the law, and you really think it's debatable based on the language in Odell, I would propose that this court consider certifying this case to the Supreme Court under RAP 4.4, because they're really the only people who can resolve this question of whether they intended a significant change in the law. As you noted, this decision will affect many cases. And we kind of need the answer to that sooner rather than later. Although I'm sure this court's analysis would be helpful, time may be of the essence in getting an answer to this. And it's possible the way you decide this could mean that everyone under the age of 25 before is going to get a new resentencing hearing. Okay, that's basically their claim. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes this matter.